You can tell them in the country, tell them in the town. The miners down in Mingo laid their shovels down. We won't pull another pillow, another ton, or lift another finger till the union we have won. Stand up, boys, let the bosses know. Turn your buckets over, turn your lanterns low. There's fire in our hearts and fire in our soul, but there ain't gonna be no fire in the hole.
This is the Labor Exchange on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. I'm your host, Robert Lindgren, with the Colorado AFL-CIO and Denver Newspaper Guild, Local 37074. Our guest today is Jeff Cahoon, president of the Boulder Area Labor Federation. Recently, State House Rep. Edie Hooten has decided not to seek re-election, and Jeff's here to speak to us about that process and some of the underlying factors. Welcome to the Labor Exchange, Jeff.
Happy to be here, Robert. Always good to join you.
Great. And, you know, first, we like to start off getting to know our guests more. Can you tell us a little more about yourself?
Sure, happy to. I've been involved with labor for, it's getting on towards 20 years now. After a business career that I got a little bored with, I started getting more active with moveon.org. That led to them asking me to not be an activist, but to be an organizer and to train me up as an organizer. My very first job was working in Boulder as a community organizer for SEIU 105. And I was very proud to be part of that campaign. I have to mention parenthetically that the county workers in 2005, 2006, did not successfully form a union in Boulder County. However, the organizing committee of the current Boulder County Workers United has communicated with the county commissioners effective last Friday that an organizing drive is underway. So it's kind of circular portion there. I'm really pleased to see them doing it.
Yeah, interesting. And I think, you know, if we look at a lot of these municipal jobs being the cornerstone of an economy in a community, and these being a place for folks to be able to have the type of wage that they might be able to stay within that community that is, you know, on the expensive side like Boulder. So certainly we all wish any worker that wants to organize all the luck, but specifically those county workers in Boulder. So from the Labor Exchange, we hope to welcome you in.
Indeed. I'm sure they'll be anxious to get engaged with the council and get engaged with the AFL-CIO.
Well, yeah, and before we get into the topic of discussion around this vacancy appointment happening in A-House District 10, you want to talk a little bit more about organizing that's happening in Boulder currently? Some of the
It's a pretty dynamic field right now. I mean, we go from we were supporting the King Super Strike a few months back by marching on the picket line there. We are very happy to join some demonstrations on the street to support some baristas who are organizing at Spruce Confections, and they are now negotiating a contract, their very first contract. And I might add, it's in a cordial environment. The boss signed a non-disparagement agreement, so they're making good progress. They're expecting actually to have a contract within the next 2 weeks. Kitchen workers at Google. And Google's getting all sorts of pressures right now with the Alphabet Workers United. And the Alphabet Workers United in Boulder have been walking down the street and working on organizing the Apple Store. So we're getting interesting cross currents here. There's still a stalemate at Longmont with a nurses union, but that is proceeding through the NLRB, National Labor Relations Board. And there are various other things popping up all over the place. It's fun to see.
One of the things I find most inspiring with the Spruce Confection workers that are organizing is you know, they're working with a union, the bakeries worker, BCTGM, Local 26. And as you look at the history of our organization or the history of labor in Colorado, that local is one that has been there, you know, basically forever, over 100 years, has normally we'd associate them with like Hostess or with the Bimbo or these other other large scale bakeries. Of course, King Soopers, I'll give a shout out. Go get your cake done. Make sure you order it ahead. They did a beautiful job on my son's cake, this wonderful Star Wars themed one that really was, I'm not kidding, took people's breaths away when we did it. But it's a local that has this kind of proud history, long history, but they really took a chance maybe 4 years ago, 5 years ago on really trying to grow and putting in the work and the engagement with the community to make these connections with young workers and then build campaigns from that. And there was a strategic corporate research class, helped connect them with some of the people that are working in locations like this. So I find it, you know, really inspiring looking at the bakers in Boulder and how those members built up, a committee. And unionizing is never easy, but it's inspiring to see when people are successful at it and are building that tight solidarity in their group. So
it is kind of inspiring. Also, just from an historical point of view, Robert, I think you'd appreciate this. There was a major grain mill in Boulder that burned down in the 30s, but supplied most of Colorado with its flour. And it was known as the Boulder Flour Mill. We're almost positive that was a union shop. So we're trying to research that. And I've got some feelers out in various places. So, hey, wait a second. Wasn't that a union shop? Because it's just basically the original location is across the street from Spruce.
Well, and I think our brother Jeff Cahoon is you know, adding the fact that I am a labor history nerd and certainly dig into those old records to find that sort of story to tell. And I would say probably our Bakers Union, Local 26, if they were organized, that's the likely one. They still have grain mills and still they're one of their folks, a young labor leader, secretary, treasurer, Drew Buckles comes out of those mills and certainly has been able to really advocate for members knowing what it's like to work in those mills for, I think, about 14 years. For our listeners, I'll let you know again, our guest today is Jeff Cahoon, the president of the Boulder Area Labor Council. We are just getting an update on some of the organizing campaigns happening in the Boulder area. We are going to switch gears now and talk a little bit about stuff that's happening in House District 10. So Edie Hooten, current representative, has decided not to run for re-election. From her statements, it's I would say we could say work-life balance and, you know, a willingness to let others take the reins and continue her legacy. She certainly was helpful on labor priorities at the Capitol and want to commend her for that. But Jeff, the reason I invited you on here, there's going to be a vacancy committee. You're on that vacancy committee. Do you want to talk a little bit about, the process of these sorts of vacancies and maybe even just some discussion of like who sits on these, you know, give us kind of a full rundown of this.
I'd be happy to. And fortunately, I have a little background in that for 2 years, I was vice chair and then chair of the Boulder County Democratic Party. And I'm still an area coordinator. The area coordinators in Boulder are unique, and that we have, for example, I have 8 precincts that I'm responsible for organizing, getting lit out, et cetera. There are about 18 of us in the county. So that's an interesting part of the function. But vacancies are a bugbear with our party because we have appointed, we've used them many, many times over the years. Jonathan Singer was elected through a vacancy committee originally. We just had another one meet in Broomfield to succeed nominating William Lindstedt when he was replacing Mike Foote, who resigned. So there's a certain undemocratic air to them in the fact that everyone thinks that they are party insiders. That's not really the case. The people who showed up are indeed Democrats because they showed up, registered, and voted in our biannual reorganization assembly. And that attendees there may indicate if they are interested in serving on a vacancy committee for the district in which they reside. I live 4 blocks away from Edie Hooten, so I'm in her district. And she is my representative. I've also known her for a long time. She's my immediate concern is for her health and safety, but she and Jim are both fine and looking forward to having a little quieter lifestyle. though I see she's still engaged very actively in fundraising for fellow Democrats. So it's an interesting race. We have 68 Democrats in her district that said, I will serve on a vacancy committee. That's in line with the Democratic Party's objective. You can make these, you have an option to make them quite small. As few, you know, you could have just six people decide to be the vacancy committee. Boulder County Dems always has opted for the largest possible vacancy committee representing the broadest spread. So these are average Democrats and not necessarily officers or like long activists. So we're electing officers or nominees. We put out a ballot with everybody's name on it. Right now, it looks like six, I believe. And that's still a little fluid. And I'll go into the candidates in just a sec. But then we will have a ballot. We will vote. The person with the least votes drops off. We keep that up till somebody gets 50%, and that's a person's the candidate. So yeah, that's the process.
Yeah, and I wanted to say, yeah, these aren't exactly rare. I think even in just this election, you'd mentioned, I actually do a slight correction. It wasn't Mike Foote, it was Matt Gray who stepped down, and Lindstedt has stepped in to run for that and was appointed, but will be the one running. And then in House District 27, Brianna Tatone's opponent, Lynn Emmerich, has replaced Christina Carlino. House District 28, we had Sheila Leader, a longtime union member, who's going to be facing Dan Montoya in that district, and a Libertarian, Amara Hildebrand. And that was because the candidate that won the primary has decided to step down and not run in those cases. And there's also, you know, If we're in the legislative session and this happens, the person in the that's put in that vacancy, they actually serve. In this one, because we're so close to the election, they face election at the next general. And so all of these candidates, you know, yes, they get appointed in vacancy, but they're going to face election immediately. You know, for HD10, heavily favored for a Democrat in that seat, that's, you know, likely whoever survives this process and is the vacancy committee appointment, you know, they are going to represent Boulder, you know, barring, you know, major changes and obviously wanting to be, you know, real with our listeners, though, this is, you know, this is the person that's likely to serve. And I was going to throw a few things out there. In 2018, one in four Colorado legislators had at some point been appointed through a process like this to serve. A little bit different now, it's about one in five. And I do know there was a slight change in the way the rules work, because of a bill, House Bill 1044, a bipartisan bill. That basically, to summarize, basically meant that everyone needs to follow the way Boulder had been doing it with a larger committee than these really small ones that are potentially allowed. There's a House rep on the Republican side who mentioned that their vacancy committee was made up of 10 people. but yeah, so really, and I think that, you know, that was someone, an advocate for this change. Okay, we're airing this. This show airs, we're recording earlier, surprise everyone. But this airs 6 p.m. on Monday. That is the same time as this vacancy committee, right?
Yep.
So as you're listening to this, listeners, you will be there are people who are going to be discussing and deciding, you know, who's going to get this vacancy. So say I'm you know, actively involved in Boulder politics. I, you know, certainly have an opinion on who I think should serve. How can they get to know the candidates? If you can give us a rundown of the ones you know, and I will preface that people should be checking with the Boulder County Democratic Party website in case there are more candidates. I don't want to say, people could jump in, I think, sooner or, you know, later. I don't want to say we have an exhaustive list, but run down some of the ones that you've heard of, and then how any engagement that you know that's happening that folks can get involved in.
Certainly. So for one thing, we do have that candidate form Saturday morning, and that's Saturday the 13th. That's probably the best episode. Also, I know candidates are reaching out directly to members of the vacancy committee. I've spoken to every single candidate so far. To some extent, that's because they're seeking our endorsement, which, by the way, our Labor Council met last night and has decided on council of the AFL-CIO as well, that this is too tight a frame for us to endorse any single candidate. But I can certainly mention the ones. In point of fact, every candidate so far that has previously run for office has been a Labor Council endorsed candidate. So running for this seat right now, we've got effectively five candidates. Two are already elected. They are city council members, Aaron Brockett and Junie Joseph. Aaron's a longtime community activist. Junie's a real up and coming star of the Democratic Party and a fellow area coordinator. And then Lynn Geisinger, who's our RTD rep currently, has thrown her hat in the ring. She is a longtime party activist and well-known community supporter. And then Tina Mew is running as well. Tina is the former president of the Boulder Valley Education Association, a longtime labor ally and a elected officer of that union. Longtime ally, a good, strong friend of labor. And then Celeste Landry, likewise, a longtime community ally, has never run for office, but Celeste is very well known in the Boulder community for her activism on election issues. And I got to know her when I was engaged with that, when we were making sure we had paper ballots in Boulder County. So it's a good range of folks to choose from. They're all great. We have, you know, from our point of view, we can't lose.
Yeah, and I don't envy your position there, having to choose between what I consider to be highly qualified candidates that are thinking about workers when they're making decisions.
Indeed. Well, it's going to be fun. I get to make my own individual choice as opposed to representing the unions. We're not coming down on this one.
And, you know, some of the background or reasoning for that is just, yeah, you got good candidates and a short time frame, and making sure that that they have their ability to get their word out. And I think it'll be interesting to see what the results are.
Certainly will. And we'll have them fast.
And again, our conversation today is with Jeff Cahoon, the president of the Boulder Area Labor Council. We're talking about the a vacancy appointment in House District 10, and Jeff is one of the vacancy committee members. So learning a little bit about him and the process there. I actually wanted to take a quick step back for the listeners and talk about a more traditional or more common way that these vacancies happen. One that I think is pretty important is in Pueblo, Colorado, we had Senate President Leroy Garcia. And for folks that know, the president of the Senate is the leader of the Senate. It's I would say, you know, second, maybe third most powerful political position in the state. And that was held by Leroy Garcia, a longtime Marine and certainly a staunch supporter of labor. He took an appointment with the Pentagon. I believe it was with the Navy, but I could be wrong there. Physically left Pueblo, Colorado, you know, against his better judgment, I would say, because I love Pueblo and I'm not as fond about Washington, D.C. But that created a vacancy, not a vacancy specifically for the Senate president, because that's an internal election within the legislature, but a vacancy in Senate District 3 in Pueblo. And so that vacancy was filled by Nick Heinrichsen, who is currently serving. And so since that happened in the middle of the legislative session, not now right before the election, but in that legislative session, he was able to serve his community through that appointment. Now he faces his first election. And then you do get some of an advantage of being an incumbent. And so just kind of giving a feel for something that I think is maybe a bit more common on how these tend to play out if they happen for reasons such as, an appointment with the federal government or moving to another job or position. You know, obviously personal matters come into play too. But wanted to switch gears back to the current representative, Edie Hooten. I'm going to play a little bit of tape from her interview with our news director here at KGNU. Let's listen to Edie.
January to May, you're working easily 100 hours a week. And I think your viewers are very politically aware. That's one reason why I tune into KGNU. They know that we had sessions that lasted 24 hours that were absolute marathons. And Boulder is a highly engaged community. And they have very high expectations for their elected officials, and be it the legislative delegation, their congressional representative, city council, county commissioner. They have very high expectations and they're highly engaged.
So Jeff, how do you react to that, especially her Hooten's reference to Boulder just being an incredibly politically active community?
Well, it is a politically active community. I'm very proud of it for that. The Boulder County Dems, for example, has at any one time more than 450 active volunteers willing to perform county duties, party duties, including literature distribution, reminders to vote if they haven't already, et cetera. It's one of the reasons that our turnout rate is in the 90s consistently. We're still working on 100%, damn it. That's our dream. But we work very seriously on turnout. And the sheer fact is Boulder makes a difference statewide in terms of voting margins for Democrats in statewide elections. I think we can pretty confidently look at the numbers and said, Boulder elected Phil Weiser, Boulder elected Dave Young, Boulder elected Jarvis Polis and Jenna. So we make a difference and we take that very seriously as a party. And our volunteers do as well, which is a positive, feedback loop. You work hard, you make a difference, you help run the legislature. And senior positions in the legislature in Colorado have almost always, in my experience, been filled by Boulder legislators. Not exclusively. I mean, there's a lot of good people in the state, but when we're dealing with that, somehow we tend to breed the leadership of the state. And that's we're proud of that.
For our listeners, our guest today is Jeff Cahoon, president of the Boulder Area Labor Council. Hey, I wanted to ask you, from your perspective as a labor leader in Boulder, what do you think is some of the top concerns of workers in Boulder? What are the challenges that they face? And how do you think labor can play a part in making that better?
We have a pretty broad agenda at the Labor Council, and certainly one of the things that labor is fighting with our allies in the community is expansion of affordable housing. And for us, it's workforce housing. If you have a good job and good pay, you should be able to live near where you work. Half our workforce drives in from Frederick. I mean, it's really, really misery inducing in terms of the drives that people do to come into a town that pays them well. So we're going to have to work on that over time. So that's very important. Having a labor friendly environment at city council, county, et cetera, is also a real hallmark of the Boulder community. We're proud of that. The county workers, by way of example, are organizing under a law that the commission passed in 2007 that declares the county has a policy of being neutral in terms of their workers wanting to form a union, and that none of the supervisors may state an opinion, aye or nay, on the union. They have to maintain public neutrality on the topic. That's a very high road, we call it, a very high road position to take. The workers at first did not believe it. They're going to fire us if we try to form a union. I said, no, there's a law in the books. It's right there. Read it. It says you're covered. And indeed, the commissioners are respecting that and responding in a very open and friendly manner to the workers saying, we want to talk. So that's kind of a cultural thing that I think we have. It is funny. I've been asked occasionally, especially by some Republicans, I didn't know we had unions. We have unions in Boulder. To which I tend to turn to them and say, I don't know. Did your lights turn on this morning? Did you take a bus? Did your newspaper arrive on time? Did you shop for groceries? How's your mail doing, bud? We're kind of important as workers in this community. And that's recognized by government.
Yeah, great. Well, I also wanted to mention, next month we'll have Labor Day. I know that one of the longest running Labor Day parade in Colorado is in your area. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that parade, that history?
I would be happy to.
Yeah.
Louisville, Colorado has had a Labor Day parade since 1936. And the unions in Louisville were in that era very, very strong. In point of fact, the Louisville Labor Council, which was our predecessor, we're the direct ancestor of that, was formed somewhere, we believe, in the late 1880s, as unions and the mines began to open up in this area. And the Labor Council, by the way, the reason it existed, it allowed them to talk candidly between each other about the boss's position, so they could have common positions going into contract negotiations. Because you had electricians union, you had plumbers union, you had pipe fitters union, you had miners union, hod carriers. It developed as a power base. And we're very proud of the fact that Louisville Labor Council was one of the four original signatories that set up the Colorado State Federation of Labor, the AFL side of the AFL-CIO. So we're quite proud that we have that proud heritage dating back then. But it's a really fun parade. We have the electricians. I always think this is a key one. The electricians drive a pole truck with a flatbed that has three power poles on it. And they're all properly braced. They're not 30 feet tall. They're like 14 feet tall. And there are linemen on them wiring it up while they're walking through town.
Yeah, it's fun watching them swing back and forth as the truck runs, and then you got the Teamsters out there always just giving out a bunch of ice cream to anyone, and it's usually hot as can be.
They're the Santa Claus of the parade. They're the last one. You have to wait for the last float to get your ice cream sandwich.
Yeah, so, and that's taking place. And that's taking place September 5th, right? That's going to be that Monday.
September 5th, and this year for the first time, and I had confirmation last night from the city of Louisville. Our permits have all been approved. We're set to host a community picnic for labor supporters. And those who, you know, would like to eat free on the union, please feel free to join us. It's in Community Park. It's like two blocks away from the end of the parade, just south of downtown. We're going to have tents, and we're working with the Boulder County Democratic Party. They're going to have a whole area for candidates to speak in and a speaker's tent.
Yeah, that's great. And I've, of course, taken my son and my daughter there several times for different ones of the parade. Always have a great time, either marching or just sitting in the shade, watching all the floats go by. It's so nice to see the community come out for it, too. It's just a big, just a really big party, basically. And yeah, you get to see a lot of folks that you haven't seen all year. Always have new organizing campaigns that are happening. So new people joining. A lot of folks there. And I think it's great. I should dig in a little further into the Louisville Labor Council, because Denver Area Labor Federation was founded in 1882. They claim the second oldest of all the labor councils in west of the Mississippi. The oldest would be in San Francisco. And then, yeah, that all came together in 1896 to create the precursor to the organization I work for, Colorado AFL-CIO, which was the Colorado State Federation of Labor. But yeah, it's just certainly an interesting and proud history. I hope our listeners can come out and enjoy the festivities with us.
It's fun to have an event about labor that isn't bad boss, you know. Instead, it's good labor. Let's have some fun. Happiness is. So we're going to say happiness is your strong union.
We're certainly, you know, positivity about the contribution of workers to our society, and seeing that long-term commitment to that from the city of Louisville has been great. Jeff, we're at the end of the show. I'm going to open it up, though. Anything, any final thoughts, anything you'd want to let our listeners know?
I think just in general, we're going to see a real surge of organizing, I think, in Boulder and in Colorado. I think the important thing for all of us to remember is this is a start. It needs to continue. We need to work together in solidarity if we're going to build worker power and have a state that respects its workers, respects families, and provides a bright future for our kids.
Thank you so much for that, Jeff. And thanks for being on the Labor Exchange.
Always a pleasure.
This has been the Labor Exchange on KGNU Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. I'm your host, Robert Lindgren, with the Colorado AFL-CIO and Denver Newspaper Guild. Our guest today is Jeff Cahoon, president of the Boulder Area Labor Council. The Labor Exchange is a member of the Labor Radio Podcast Network. Find more great labor radio on laborradionetwork.org. Thank you.